This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalby Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
This month in the news, the truth about the Kellyabinsk asteroid and NASA's latest journey to Mars. Asteroids that enter the Earth's atmosphere are notoriously hard objects to study because they usually will arrive unannounced and are visible only for a brief time before either exploding in the atmosphere or impacting the ground. In fact, in recent years, two of the larger asteroids that exploded in the atmosphere went largely unstudied because the only information which was available came from satellites or distant infrasonic sound stations. Even meteorites that impact the Earth, like the one at Sutton Hill in California in 2012, can only give a partial picture of the life of an asteroid, because we are limited to only studying the chemical composition of the surviving fragments. Such information can be used to imply the origins of the meteorite, but without the direct observations of the asteroid entering the atmosphere, it is impossible to deduce its original trajectory, or even original size. So when, earlier this year, in February, an asteroid exploded above the Russian Urals, in the skies above the city of Kellyabinsk, and the event was recorded by thousands of cameras on car dashes and on the side of buildings, scientists had access to an unprecedented wealth of information to investigate the asteroid. Scientists have now reconstructed the full story of the Kellyabinsk asteroid, and last month published the conclusions to their studies in both the journals Science and Nature. By calculating the speed of the asteroid, which was measured to be moving at about 50 times the speed of sound upon entering the upper atmosphere, and the brightness of the final detonation, which was briefly brighter than the sun, they have found that the asteroid had a mass of 12,000 metric tons and was about 19 meters in diameter, or about the size of a house. When it exploded at about 35 kilometers above the ground, nearly all of the mass was vaporized into dust and gas, with the surviving fragments recovered, weighing in at a total of less than 800 kilograms. The largest surviving fragment smashed into the frozen sheets of Lake Kerbalkal, 60 kilometers southwest of Kellyabinsk, and its recovery was mostly thanks to a nearby security camera catching the moment of impact. All this information about the Kellyabinsk asteroid has revealed one new important finding. By modelling the asteroid's entrance into the upper atmosphere, we have been able to retrace the trajectory of the asteroid by thousands of years and have found that the asteroid originated from the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. More interestingly though, they have found that there is a clear link between the orbit of the Kellyabinsk asteroid and the orbit of a much larger 2.2-kilometre asteroid, which was found in 1999, called 86039. For several millennia, both asteroids have shared intersection points at both their closest and furthest approaches to the Sun. The chance of this occurring at random is remote. This implies that perhaps at some point in the past, the Kellyabinsk asteroid and 86039 asteroid may have been the same object, and that the Kellyabinsk asteroid may have been formed by a chance collision between 86039 and some other piece of solar system debris. Using the model of the orbit for the Kellyabinsk asteroid, it was possible to deduce how much energy would be required in a collision with 86039 to send a fragment as large as the one above Kellyabinsk on a course towards Earth. The scientists found that it would only require a relatively small push when 86039 was at the periapsis of its orbit to produce the Kellyabinsk asteroid. The most important idea to take from all this is that we are now able to confirm the sort of materials that are present in the asteroids that make up the asteroid belt, because we now have both chemical structure of the asteroid from the meteor in Lake Kerbalkal and the confirmed origin from the videos that captured the asteroid's descent through the atmosphere. Since it is thought that the asteroids in the asteroid belt have remained largely unchanged in their properties since the birth of the solar system, knowing exactly what materials lie within the belt help us constrain theories that allow us to deduce the origins of planets like the Earth. Also in the news last month, on Monday the 18th at about 6:30 Greenwich Mean Time, the Martian Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution Satellite, known as Marvin, was launched from Cape Canaveral on board an Atlas V rocket. The primary goal of Marvin is to measure volatile gases in the Martian atmosphere, such as water, carbon dioxide, or nitrogen, and determine the processes involved in Mars losing its atmosphere over the course of the planet's long history. When Marvin reaches Mars, it will enter an elliptical orbit with a period of about 4.5 hours, where it will stay for the year-long duration of the mission. Marvin's orbit will take it both close enough to Mars to experience drag from the atmosphere, and far enough away to be able to take images of the entire Martian surface. Over the course of Marvin's year-long mission, it will be utilizing its several onboard instruments to conduct its investigations of Mars. The primary instrument is the Imaging Ultraviolet Spectrograph, usually referred to by its anagram, IUVS, which will be used to map out the different quantities of various volatile molecules within the Martian atmosphere by measuring the unique frequencies of light they emit. However, the focus for the IUVS will be different at each stage in Marvin's orbit. At the furthest point from Mars, the apoapsis, it will be measuring the overall levels of the molecules in the Martian atmosphere. And then, as it approaches Mars again and reaches its nearest point, the periapsis, the instrument is turned to point straight down and measure local variations in the quantities of the molecular construction of the atmosphere. The second instrument is called the Natural Gas and Ion Spectrometer, or NGIMS, which deals with measuring more stable elements that tend to not form molecules, such as helium or argon. NGIMS is not a camera like the IUVS instrument, and requires direct contact with the atmosphere to be able to measure its contents, therefore requiring Marvin to dip down to just 80 kilometers above the Martian surface, where the atmosphere becomes 10 times denser, and NGIMS can start taking atmospheric samples. The maneuver will be done several times over the course of Marvin's life, and the short periods Marvin spends at these lower altitudes will be the most precarious of the entire mission after the launch on the 18th of last month. The final instrument on board Marvin is known as the Particles and Fields Package, and is in itself a slew of different instruments and tools. The aim of the Particles and Fields Package is to constantly keep track of the effects of the sun, how strong the solar winds are, and constantly measure the highly variable and weak Martian magnetic field. Marvin's goal, as stated earlier, is to track Mars's atmospheric decay at the present time. It will do this by measuring what is there now from the ultraviolet emission using IUVS, and physically using NGIMS. Then by keeping track of how the atmosphere changes over the course of the year-long mission, and especially how it changes in relation to solar activity, it is hoped that Marvin will uncover some of the unknowns about Mars's atmospheric past. For example, how quickly did Mars lose its atmosphere when the magnetic field stopped protecting Mars from the powerful solar winds? Or what sort of atmosphere we would expect to find on Mars when it was young, with oceans and continents and weather like it was our own planet.